You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 12th of March. The awesomeness continues. The Jazz sweep the road trip, wins in Memphis and New Orleans over the weekend. We'll break it all down. Donovan goes bananas. Rubio's on fire. Guys can't score against the Jazz. It is a good, good day. It's coming up. It's Locked On Jazz. Pow. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. So glad to have you with me. Thanks so much for tuning in. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz with expertise, insight, geeky numbers, look behind the curtains, some really, really cool stuff, hopefully. All right, we are so jammed, we got tomorrow, we got all week, and we got big games coming up. There's so much to cover. I'm going to try to get through it as quickly as possible and cover as much as possible. Today's show brought to you by The Advocates, Intercap Lending, and welcoming a new sponsor to today's program, Optimal Norms. Really interesting stuff. Mental performance consultant company, Optimal Norms. All right, Jazz beat New Orleans last night. Great win. Let's go big picture here for a second. Here's our order of the show, by the way. I'm going to talk about last night's win, some of the things the defense is doing, the game against Memphis, then dig a little deep on what's going on with Rubio right now, and then do the playoff update at the end. That's the plan. Just last night, first of all, it became a blowout. And if you haven't noticed very quietly, the Jazz suddenly have won all of their last four games by double figures. Like, six-game win streak for the Jazz, and all of a sudden it's 14 over Orlando, 20 over Indiana, 17 over Memphis, and 17 over New Orleans. New Orleans won 10 straight with Anthony Davis. And the Jazz are just stymieing people. It's the same story I tell you every day. I'm not trying to be repetitive. It's so stunning. The defensive numbers by the Utah Jazz are just incredible. Last night, they held New Orleans to a 97.3 while putting together their about 26th best offensive game. And 97.3. How do I explain these numbers to you since they're not natural? League average offense is about 105, 106. So that's 10 points per 100% possessions better than average. The best defense, the worst offense in the league is 101. You keep someone under 100, you should virtually win every time. Quinn's offensive system by itself will get you to 100 points in 100 possessions. Usually, not always. And we've had our share where we haven't gotten there. We didn't against Memphis, actually. But to be holding people below, you are crushing them and their soul defensively when you do this. And the Jazz have now have 30 games this year where they've held an opponent below a point of possession. Since the win streak started, only the Spurs, a game which the Jazz won on February 3rd, the Pelicans on February 5th, and the Timberwolves on March 2nd. By the way, Jazz won all three of those games. Has anyone scored more than a point of possession against the Jazz? This has been going on for almost 2 months. It's astronomical. And I sat here before the show started today trying to see, like, what, and I like to do things through numbers, right, rather than just tell you how great we are. And we're great right now. Defensively, it's insane. How do I explain to you what's happening here? This, the best way I can describe it is that the Jazz defense is more dominating compared to the league average than the Rockets' offense or the Warriors' offense since Rudy's come back. So that's the best way I can explain it to you. Since January 19th, the league average offense, which is actually us, I think, is about 107.2. The Rockets and the Nuggets have the best offense in the league since then. They are 7.6 points above league average. The Jazz defense in that same time period is a 97.6. It's 10 points better than league average. It's not only better, it's like 25% better than the offense. Okay, let's try another one that I have for you today. The Jazz defense of rating in the last 23 games since Rudy came back is a 97.6. So it's like way below 100. What the heck does that mean? The number two defense in the league is the Toronto Raptors at 101.8. So the Jazz are nearly are 4.2 points better than the next best defense in the NBA. 10 points per 100 possessions better than average. All right, let me try again. I'm trying to give you another one. It's incredible. The Jazz 4.2 break between the Jazz and number two is the exact same as number two to number 13. Right? So the difference between the Jazz and the second best team, Toronto, is the difference between Toronto and the Lakers who are about 13th. It gets better if I go to Houston, who's the third. By the way, Houston's the third best defense in this time period. That's probably, frankly, more newsworthy than the Jazz. If you take them and add 4.2 on it, you end up in the middle of the pack. It's what the Jazz are, the Jazz level of separation. And there's some interesting things going on here because the feeling, to some extent, we kind of get back into this favors Gobert thing. The Jazz are grabbing 81% of all defensive rebounds right now. That's number one in the league in that span. It's a big deal. The other one that's interesting to me is earlier this year, the Jazz were forcing a good deal of turnovers, and I actually thought at times that it might be hurting them. They have decreased the amount of turnovers that they're forcing right now and are just playing a little bit more in that shell. They're below league average now in forcing turnovers. They're the number one team in the league in defensive rebounding. They've reduced the amount of turnovers they're forcing, and in turn, they're fouling less. They're now the fifth best team in the league at not fouling, and they're defending the shot. They're the number one team against the shot. So some of the areas where earlier this year I didn't love what they were doing, which was playing an overly aggressive defensive style, forcing turnovers to try to cover up the offensive weaknesses, it was in turn leading to more fouling. Now guys like Ricky Rubio and some of the others have begun to understand, hey, I got this guy behind me. I can play this a great deal differently than I have. The other one that's happening here, and we've talked about this kind of a little bit, is we're eliminating guard scoring. So if you run through the most recent games the Jazz have played, and they've played some pretty good teams, and you look at what happens to the guards, to the credit of Jrue Holiday, he did not, unlike some of the guys who, frankly, I thought have kind of quit on trying to go to the basket. Jrue Holiday last night kept trying to go to the basket. But what ends up happening to Jrue Holiday last night is he ends up going 2 for 7 in the restricted area. He's been shooting 70% in that. So instead of going 5 for 7, he goes 2 of 7. He loses those 3 field goals, and now it just makes perfect sense. You look at his box score and his shooting's off. Right? We talk about what Rudy does to the bigs, and we can talk about what he does to Anthony Davis. But the defense around the rim, so last night Jrue Holiday goes 7 of 19. He shoots 37%. He actually shot the 3 well. He doesn't get to the free throw line. And he's missing by going 2 of 7. He should be 10 of 19. And then he has a great night. Same thing happened in Indiana where Victor Oladipo, who usually is able to get to the basket 6 or 7 times a game, doesn't get to the rim because Rudy's simply too good. And When you can't get to the basket, then all of a sudden you're taking lower percentage shots. These guys aren't so much, at least in my opinion, having bad nights. If you look at Oladipo that night, he definitely missed some shots. You start to miss some shots when you get uncomfortable with where you're shooting. So Oladipo, who takes six shots a night at the rim, went 2 for 3 against the Jazz at the rim. Now all of a sudden he's got all these mid-range shots. He's not shooting the three well since break. And all of a sudden Victor Oladipo has a bad day. Same thing happened to Evan Fournier. So that's a large part of what is taking place defensively with the Utah Jazz right now. They're just dominant. And I hope I expressed that to some extent to you. What they're doing to people in various areas of the floor is also just dominant. I'll touch on that in a second. Talk about Donovan Surge last night. Ricky Rubio's growth and, for the first time in his career, doing something differently. Today's show, those are all coming up. Today's show brought to you by The Advocates. Matt and The Advocates do some really neat stuff. They're injury attorneys that help you out in the case of need. They've been in Utah for a long time, 25 years. And here's how it works. You get in an accident, you now need some help. So you call Matt at The Advocates at 801-355-5550. What's different about The Advocates is that within 60 seconds, a lawyer calls you. And then immediately after the lawyer diagnoses your case, you go into their system. Their system, 25 years in the making, is 106 steps of just efficiency. Boom, 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 boom. And along the way, they have individuals who work on each of those steps specifically to be the most productive. See, accidents are all different, but the process is the same. And by having the process be that efficient, that means productivity, communication, expediting the process, and giving you the best results. Making sure you get results, nothing bad happens to you, and you're treated well. That's the signature of what The Advocates do. Call them at 801-355-5550. That's 801-355-5550. The shot realm thing I wanted to bring up, and some of this, guys, I'm doing because there's a lot of different analysis. I don't think everybody else has all these different things, so I like to share them with you. This is the Jazz opponent shooting. Last night, the Pelicans, 22 of 44 at the rim. 44 shots at the rim by the Pelicans last night is the high of anyone against the Jazz all season long, by a lot. And yet they only shoot 57%. Memphis, who's very poor shooting team around the rim, goes 10 of 26. Indiana and Orlando didn't even try. Teams had stopped trying. Phoenix took 16 shots in the restricted area. Portland, 18. They got us. Dallas, 14. Houston, 21. They made 17. Incredible. Minnesota, 18. They made 16. Then Sacramento, 22. Orlando, 15. Indiana, 20. Memphis, 26. To New Orleans' credit, they went to the rim last night. But then they only made 57% of them, which is better than a lot of other places on the floor. The Jazz are also, in this road trip, got very fortunate on above-the-break three-point shooting and continue to do so. Now, part of that is earlier this year, they got very unfortunate on that. So it's straightening out. But the three opponents went 2 of 19, 4 of 19, and 4 of 18 on above-the-break three-point shooting on that trip. So there was definitely a level. I also think we're just playing confidently and flying around a little bit. There has to be some defensive impact, as much as Kevin Pelton and everybody else says that's just pure variance. If you missed last night's game, the story of the game, I think, for most fans is that Donovan Mitchell is having a brutal night and then clicks in like only a superstar can. And I don't want to call him a superstar yet, but what he did was what superstars do. And what I liked about it is the intelligence of what I saw. So Donovan is having a tough night. Anthony Davis is a beast. He ends up having his first ever triple-double, a career-high 10 block shots. And Donovan cannot get to the basket at all, and he cannot figure. His above-the-break three-point shot is about 32% right now, and off the bounce it's about 32%. It's a little bit of a struggle for him. So he's one of I think 9 at the point. Anthony Davis makes a layup with 3:15 left in the third to give the Pelicans the lead, 68-63. But Davis falls to the ground. Mitchell calls for the outlet, sprints the floor, goes to the rim, lays it up and in for his fourth point of the night at the 3:08 mark. It just was a heady, smart play that got him going a little bit, gave him a little juice, made him feel, I've done something right. Everything else had been wrong. But he saw it. He saw Anthony Davis. He called for the ball, and he went. The smarts on that is high level. Coming back the other way, Jay Crowder misses a three, which I think at that point Jay's 0-for-7 himself. Favors offensive rebound, kicks out to Mitchell. Donovan hits the three on a catch-and-shoot three, which is his much better shot. We're now tied. Anthony Davis misses. Donovan's now feeling it, drives to the rack, lays it up and in, and all of a sudden Donovan Mitchell, who was having a tough night, has 7 points in 50 seconds. He's fouled on the play, which was a nifty. So now he's got 8 points in 50 seconds. Miller, they get a dunk. Donovan and at that last, Anthony Davis is gassed. Davis checks out. Now Donovan, just as I said on the broadcast, I think my call was, looked like a kid who had been told no sweets for 3 weeks, and now suddenly the cupboard was open. So now Anthony Davis is out of the game. So he got himself going with that heady play, hit a shot, drove to the basket. Now Davis is out of the game, and he just comes. Dunks on a drive to the basket, misses a three, gets fouled when he tried to just absolutely annihilate Nikola Mirotic after completely annihilating Jrue Holiday. Then hits a pull-up three with 2 seconds left in the quarter, and all of a sudden Donovan's going, hits a floater 15 seconds in, plus the foul. And Donovan Mitchell has suddenly scored 18 points in 2 minutes and 51 seconds, but it's all spurred by the astute recognition of why he was struggling. Let's talk Ricky Rubio for a second. Ricky Rubio just had back-to-back games of 10 rebound double-doubles. He now has 9 double-doubles this year. 5 of them are actually rebounding double-doubles. I think it's interesting is Ricky Rubio, who plays as passionately as any player you've ever seen. Last night was his first ever 30-10-5 of his career that was a 30-10 with rebounds, only the second 30-10-5 of his career. Fourth time he's gone for 30, all of them in the last calendar year, which led me to run Ricky Rubio's last calendar year. What's interesting on Rubio's last calendar year, remember he kicks in last year post All-Star break. If you run his last calendar year, Ricky Rubio is shooting 41% from the field and 33% from three. Those are not great, but it's considerably better than the career 38 and the career 31. And the 33% from three is actually the number you need him at for everything else he brings to the table. If he goes to 33% three-point shooting, and most of those threes for him, at least it feels to me, are late shot clock threes where the plays develop, they leave him open, and you're kicking it around, and he goes to takes a catch and shoot three. That's actually a pretty good number. It's not great. It's not hurting you, though. And the reason I say that is Ruby on a pull-up three is a 20% shooter. That's a bad shot for him. Catch and shoot three, he's now at about 37% this year. Okay, well, if we swing it around, we're late into a shot clock, and he shoots 30-plus percent from three, that's a good shot. The league shoots below that. And that's exactly what Rubio's done. The last 7 seconds of the shot clock this year, Ricky Rubio from three is 20 of 58. Okay, it's great. That's good. Like, if that's what Ricky's going to be, is they don't guard you, it gets late in the shot clock, he busts 35% of his threes late, that's good. it's interesting because his middle shot clock stuff is where he's not good. He's 37 of 138. I told you you'd get geeky numbers in this. The look behind the curtain I talk about all the time with Ricky is the leadership, the passion, the up 20 in Indiana, flying into the crowd trying to block a dunk, leading the group out for dinner in Sacramento. I don't know how often he does it. I don't watch these guys and who they go to dinner. They never want me around if I do. But he's playing with the fire and the passion, and he's loved. I mean, his Minnesota teammates evidently were not that pleased with the way Jeff Teague sent him into the crowd. Like, you just don't do that to Ricky Rubio. So you suddenly look at Ricky for the last year, post All-Star break last year, into that, and that's 41-33, and you have now these incredible intangibles. And I think, you know, he's working with the same coaches for another year next year. Jason Kidd, remember that comparison? Everyone thought that. Jason Kidd's career, 40% shooter, 35% from three. But that's probably most post his career. I mean, and I don't know, you know, Jason Kidd's a Hall of Famer, and I didn't love that. Like, that's hard to put a Hall of Famer on someone. But Ricky's 27 years old. So now I go look at, well, what was Jason Kidd prior to 27 years old? 39, 38, 40, 37, 41% shooting, 41% shooting, 40. Then he turns 30. Then at 29, suddenly he's 41-34. He has a bad year in New Jersey at 39-32, another 40-36. Goes to Dallas and picks it up. And the pizzazz, I don't, you know, I can't equate that to on Ricky on what that pizzazz stuff means, but it means something. Just the level he and passion he plays with. The other one on Ricky is the free throw attempts. If he takes four free throws a game, which in February he's taking 4.5 and in March he took 5.3, all this other stuff goes away. I cannot express to you how nearly impossible it is to be an efficient offensive player if you are not taking free throws. I mean, I tried for 2 years with Rodney Hood, frankly. But Ricky's going to the line five times a game in the last 14 games, averaging 16 points a game. He's actually shooting it okay. But he actually, if you go to the line five or six times and make four or five of them, you actually don't have to shoot it that great. If you've listened to Pack and listened to the show, I actually think you know that. I think you're nodding at me right now. So there's something going on here with Ricky that's really interesting, and that is that the other part, he's never been a part of this. Ricky Rubio has never, ever been in a playoff race before. And this is a guy who plays with a fire and a passion toward the game that this is, I think, what he's made for. He told me an interesting story about when he got to know Kevin Garnett and they were talking, and Garnett talked to him about playing a game seven and how incredibly exhausted Garnett was and how he was able to summon this extra level of energy, and that Rubio thinks about that all the time, is that that's his goal, is to be able to do that. It's kind of awesome. Not kind of awesome, totally awesome. So we're seeing a different player in Ricky Rubio. New sponsor on today's show, Optimal Norms, mental performance consultant. How important do you think mental skills are to your success as an athlete? So if you're a parent of an athlete, what part of the game do you think is mental? What percentage do you think that's the impact? As a parent of an athlete, you're getting them their weight training, you're getting their great coaching, you're doing all the things you can to help your child have an edge. Well, more and more professional athletes are using that edge with mental performance training. If you think the game's 30% mental, 50% mental, 20% mental, 80% mental, how much of that percentage are you training? More and more athletes are training for mental skills. If the competitor's in the weight room, you go to the weight room. If the competitor's getting mental training, do it. Optimal Norms is here for you, both in person and online at OptimalNorms.com. If you're going to physically train your brain, get those mental skills, you want to do it with Optimal Norms. Optimal Norms will give you, when you purchase five or more sessions, tell them you're the Locked On Jazz, you get one of them for free. OptimalNorms.com, 801-722-8180. That's 801-722-8180. Mental performance training, mental performance consulting for your athlete. Today's show also brought to you by Intercap Lending. Local company now, 40 years in the business, and Intercap has brought themselves to Utah doing great work. That's who we refinanced with our latest refinance. Steve Carter took care of us. Intercap does some great things. If you are someone who's got a loan that is at least is unique, shall we call it? And what I mean by unique is maybe you own other properties, you're self-employed, you have business assets. Some of the non-direct lenders have a hard time with things that. Let Intercap take a look at your loan. Call Steve Carter, 385-885-28. Then the really cool thing, if you do your mortgage with Intercap, they'll do your appraisal for free. That's an awful lot of money that you're saving right there. Veterans, they do great work with you. They have super good VA pricing. They're the Sotheby preferred lender as well, and they can help you out with that. If you're looking for a refinance, that's what we did. They service their own loan. They have long-time relationships with them. I was really, really impressed with my interactions with Intercap. Download the app. Did so much on the app. It was as easy as ordering a pizza, Steve Carter likes to say. Not quite, because there's some government regulations that aren't on pizza, but you got the idea. Give them a call, 385-885-28. That's 385-885-28. Steve Carter in Intercap Lending, NMLS number 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. All right, let's look at the playoff picture. It's insanity. I will tell you again, I tweet out the models. I don't love the models. I think they're all underestimating the rate by which teams are going to win. And that is why I built the system that I built, which is dividing all games into five categories: certain wins, should wins, pick'ems, unlikelies, and no chancers. And thus far in the certain wins, which are supposed to be 80 to 100%, the eight Western Conference teams battling for six spots are a combined 12-0. 12-0. The should wins, 60 to 80% should wins, the teams are 13-7, so they're winning at 65%, which seems low until you realize San Antonio lost one of those games to the Pelicans. The Clippers lost one of those games to the Pelicans. So a bunch of those losses are actually, again, Denver lost one of those games to the Clippers. So of those seven losses, three of them are internally. Pick'em games, which should be 50%, teams are 7-5, so a little bit above. Unlikely games, which are 20-40, teams are 6-7. So my point on this is, you can look at the models right now with the Jazz, and all of them, 538, ESPN, Basketball Reference, they're all very positive on Utah right now. I'm not disagreeing with that. The only thing is, the Jazz are going to win games that they're supposed to win or expected to win. The other teams are going to win games that the models don't think they're going to win. Interesting tweet last night, by the way. Rubio went 7 of 11, scored 18 points when matched up with Rajon Rondo last night. Hadn't seen that. If you look at the models right now, they get you excited because they put the Jazz in really nice position. But I think other teams will jump into those spots and perform. So I still think 47 is what you're going to need to get in. I also think 47, I was talking to Quinn about this, is going to tie you for like fifth or sixth. I mean, I think there could be... My projection right now, San Antonio 47, Denver 47, New Orleans 47, Clippers 47, Utah 47. Five teams tied for the last three spots. Oklahoma City, 48. Portland, I'd have at 48. They might be higher. Minnesota, I had at 50. And Minnesota, for all, is actually not, without Jimmy Butler, they haven't lost any games you really think they should have won. All right, let's review the weekend and what took place. The Minnesota won a 51% game against the Warriors, which is big. Steph Curry injury is huge. That's a great, huge win for them because their next set of games is Washington, Spurs, Houston, who they're favored against, and Clippers, followed by the Knicks, who they're favored, and then the 76ers. They close with the softest thing ever. You know, if they can get, if nothing disastrous happens to Minnesota in the next five games, they're totally fine and probably going to knock on Portland a little bit for that seed. Minnesota has six games left that are should wins and three games left that are certain wins. So they have nine games left in the positive. They only have two games left where they're below 40% win chance. They're in really good shape. The Spurs, supposedly getting Kawhi Leonard back, play Houston tonight. Then they have a sequence where they've got to win Orlando, New Orleans, and Minnesota. They've got to win against the Pelicans and the Timberwolves. They have high win probabilities on a bunch of games coming up here. They better get this thing righted. They are not right now. They lost Oklahoma the other day. San Antonio has six games left that are should wins. They're 0-2 in those this far. That's what I'm talking about. They have seven games left that are above 60% win chances. But they have four pick'ems left, and they have five games where they're below 40%. So their schedule's tough. Oklahoma won this week against both Phoenix we had that on Thursday, and then they beat San Antonio. They're winning the games they're supposed to win. They are 3-0 in their should wins and 2-0 in their certain wins. I mean, they really are doing exactly what I just said. They have seven games left that are 60% or above, and they just don't seem to be losing those games. And they only have two games left, which are below 40%. So I think they're fine. Denver got their wins they had to get against the Lakers, barely, and Sacramento. They now play in L.A. tonight. Oh, no, tomorrow. They play in L.A. tomorrow. Then they play Detroit at home after we do and have a bunch of really soft. Denver needs to win about five in a row here because then they have a really tough stretch to close. So the next five for Denver, they can't slip. Portland's rolling and should continue to roll. Their schedule never gets that hard. I think they're heading toward the third seed, separating themselves from this bunch. New Orleans has, what's interesting about New Orleans that I have not heard talked about enough, because of their canceled game, they have three in a row coming up. They have five and six nights coming up. They play Charlotte coming up here. Then they have that Spurs game. But then they have Houston, Boston back-to-back, day off, Dallas, Indiana, L.A. And then they play Houston on the backside of that. The schedule's going to get them. Clippers have a huge week coming up. They play Oklahoma, Portland, and Minnesota in Houston after they play Chicago on Tuesday. Then they play Houston on Thursday, Oklahoma Friday, Sunday against Trailblazers, Tuesday against Timberwolves, Wednesday against Milwaukee, on the road to Indiana. This is where the Clippers could trip. But nobody's tripping yet. It's incredible. That is today's show. Thank you very much for tuning in. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Lots of fun aspect of things taking place. Hope you're enjoying all the things that are taking place and enjoying the show. Locked On NBA today with Josh Lloyd. Looks at the Pelicans, the Clippers, and the Blazers. So a good one to catch right now. Should I tell Google to just do it for you right now? Or should I tell Alexa to? All right, I won't do it. Have a good day.